Welcome back in hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Going to have the Rex rant coming up a little bit later this hour. Joe Rex Road's rant of the week taking place at 7:45. Corey Curtis from News 2 joining us at 8 o'clock. Darren McFarland at 9 o'clock here on the program. As always, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Looking ahead to the Titans and the Bengals coming up in the divisional round. Jim texting in says, segment idea, put the 11 starters for the Titans and Bengals on the playground, and each of you pick your first choice as if you were choosing sides for a pickup game. Would be interested in the count of Titans versus Bengals. You could do the offense one day and the defense the next day. What do you think about that, Joe Rex Road? We can just go playground style. I choose you.
Okay. That's kind of a good idea. So like we would put the Titans 11 and the Bengals 11 on offense and then see how many we would pick.
That is correct.
I can tell you right now, I'll Burrow, Chase, and Derrick Henry and AJ Brown Yeah, that's probably right. That's probably your top. Unless you're looking at various offensive linemen that are important too. There's not a ton on either of these teams this year that are going to be super high picks. But I would say the Titans still have the better upside and overall still talent on their offensive line than the Bengals. That'd be interesting. The defense would be interesting too. I'd say probably quite a bit more Titans going before Bengals.
Well, when I select Taylor Lewan on my team, I need some announcement to go along with it. Like, gee, just him just running across the playground there. Be good stuff.
He's got an amazing podcast, Taylor Lewan!
It will never, ever, ever get old. Taking more of your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. So Derrick Henry has been back at practice. If you look at some of the videos that have come out, looks pretty good at practice with the drills that he's been doing. And at this point, I would expect that he's going to be ready to go and that he will be playing coming up against the Bengals on Saturday. The question is, as you look at the way the offense closed out the season with a pretty good performance by Ryan Tannehill, 4 touchdown passes through the air, Julio Jones looked like he was playing pretty well in that game against the Texans. And now with Derrick Henry coming back as well, the Titans offense getting healthier, could we be about to see the Titans offense explode heading into this game, Joe Rex Road? This was supposed to be an offense heading into the year that was an elite offense in the NFL, that was an offense that could single-handedly win this team games, much like we saw a year ago. I think everybody would agree the defense has performed above expectations, and the offense, due to a lot of injury that's taken place, has not been as consistent as we expected heading into the season. Now that they're healthier, do you have the same expectations for this offense heading into the playoffs that you did heading into the season, Joe Rex Road? What do you think of the state of this offense right now?
Well, I would say yes, but like, can I sit here and say I'm just confident that that's what's going to happen? It's all going to come together. I can't say I have like soaring confidence, but yeah, I mean, I think you're right that all the things that we thought about this offense could potentially materialize here. And that's the whole idea. And again, it's not like we never saw it during the season. Discussed stat. I wrote it some last week. Came up from ESPN Stats and Info. Actually, Willie Donick texted me last week, like, do you have any idea? Because the stat is, from ESPN Stats and Info, is 7.0 yards per play for the Titans when Henry, A.J. Brown, Julio Jones are on the field together. 7 yards a play is ridiculous. That would be a full yard better than the NFL leader this year overall. But Willie's question was, do you know how many plays that was? And I don't have the exact number, but it was like, it wasn't a ton. I mean, it was a small number. So it's a pretty small sample size. I mean, the three of them were in several games together, but in some of those games, you know, Julio left earlier, AJ left early, or just, you know, there were just personnel groupings where the three of them weren't together. But that still, to me, kind of tells you that it's, you know, those three can still create that that situation where a defense is in a bind and they got to make some tough choices. I think the choice is going to be against the Titans. And even when Derrick Henry was in it, you know, in the Dolphins game, for example, the choice was don't let them run. You can't let them run. You got to stop the run. And I think that's what the Bengals will do. And I think that's what future opponents, if the Titans earn any future opponents, will do. But yeah, I think that Julio Jones and the way he played at Houston gives you a little bit of optimism that he can carry that again. Again, I don't think Julio Jones all of a sudden become receiver one and all over the field making Julio Jones in Atlanta-like plays, but that Julio Jones we saw, that plays in the postseason. A.J. Brown, we know, is going to be there and is, you know, he's a huge key here moving forward. Now you throw in 22, and yeah, it could be special. And I think the offensive line is something that just can't get lost in this discussion. It's such a big part of this. How has this time off helped them? How is Saffold feeling? How's Ben Jones feeling? Is Nate Davis kind of coming back into his own right now? Taylor Lewan. I mean, it's if that group can – they've had two straight games now with no issues, and I think they've played pretty well, but they can play better. And if they can find their best level, then I really think that an explosion offensively is on the table.
Well, and that's, I think, what you can be encouraged about as they came down the stretch is the last couple of games, it did get better. Now, I understand, especially in the case of the Texans, it's not like the Texans' defense is getting after you and sacking the quarterback left and right. So I understand that. I mean, you're not necessarily worried about, you know, them just sacking Ryan Tannehill six or seven times. Quite frankly, you're not really worried about that all that much with Cincinnati either heading into this matchup this weekend. But for the majority of this season, it didn't really matter who they were going against. Offensive line had their struggles in pass blocking. It seems like maybe it's in a better spot now heading into the playoffs. And because of that, Ryan Tannehill, I think, has played some pretty consistently good football. Really, I guess since the second half of the San Francisco game, Ryan Tannehill has been pretty darn good the last few games. And that, to me, might be the most encouraging thing outside, obviously, of Derrick Henry coming back and what that can mean for the offense. Outside of that, I think maybe the most encouraging thing to me is the way that Tannehill has played in the last couple of games. He has looked more like the Ryan Tannehill of old with the Titans than he did the Ryan Tannehill where he's throwing interceptions left and right earlier this year.
I agree. And whether, you know, whatever you think about that, and that's another, it's like whatever, whoever, you know, an NFL town starting quarterback, unless it's clear that you're talking about an elite quarterback or it's clear you're talking about a terrible quarterback, you know, there's going to be, it's just going to be like two sides on a quarterback, right? So whether you believe that Tannehill was just terrible and, you know, the last 2 years were a mirage, or you believe that none of these mistakes are on him and it's all about the stuff around him, then the truth is probably somewhere in between like it usually is. I agree that he's played better. He was asked about his own confidence last week. He said, contrary to popular belief, you know, it never left me. But it looked that way. It looked that way at times. Like he and again, in some of the games, like you would expect some loss of confidence because, oh no, now the rookie's got to play because everybody's hurt at receiver, or, oh, I just got sacked again. So whatever it was, he didn't look like his confident quarterback, and it looked like he was pressing. And like you said, he was making some mistakes you can't make. But I feel like he has looked more like himself last couple games. And then even when he doesn't get protection, he makes a play like he did. I'd love to see the I still feel like the Titans would have found a way to win that game. But if that sack happens at Houston and now they're punting they're relying on a defense that all of a sudden cannot stop the Texans and did not stop the Texans,
yeah,
the rest of that day, you wonder, would the Titans, well, I guess the Titans would have played last weekend if that was the case. So that play was just that's what you need. You're going to need him to make a few more plays like that, breaking the pocket on a third and 11 and running for 15, or, you know, just he's going to have to make some big time throws. But yeah, I think it's all it's all coming together to give them a chance to have the offense we thought they'd have.
So how much of the success for the Titans in the playoffs rests squarely on the shoulders of Ryan Tannehill? We'll get into that discussion coming up on the other side. Welcome more of your thoughts as well in our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Tune in later this morning at 8:45 for your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click and win a pair of tickets to a future Preds home game brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. We'll have that opportunity coming up for you at 8:45. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. So, Joe, we've talked about Ryan Tannehill and how the last – really 10 quarters, he's looked pretty good out there for the Titans at this point. How much pressure is on Tannehill in your mind heading into these playoffs, given what's happened this year with the injuries? Now the team is getting healthier, the way that he's played at different stretches this year, turning the football over. Now that he's got his guys back, looks a little bit more like himself. How much pressure is on Tannehill, and how much do you think the success or failure of the Titans in this postseason run beginning against Cincinnati coming up this weekend is going to rest squarely on his shoulders with the throws he's going to have to make?
Well, it's certainly possible that the Titans run the ball really well, and they start out well. They build a lead. They get Joe Burrow to the ground. They win convincingly, and Tannehill would still be a part of that. I mean, even within that, there's going to be third and longs. There's going to be situations where he's got to make plays. But I mean, I could see a game Saturday where, you know, it's not like, oh, here it is, Tannehill down 6, 48 seconds left at your own 30. It's all on you, buddy. Like, that doesn't have to happen. So ideally for the Titans, they all play well. The team plays well. They don't make big mistakes. They don't have turnovers. They don't have some special teams gaffe. And they show that they're the better team, and Tannehill doesn't have to be a hero. I think certainly that's possible. I don't think it's like I can't imagine the Titans getting to the Super Bowl, winning the Super Bowl without Tannehill doing some special stuff in some moments. You know, it just and I don't know. Look, I don't remember every detail of like the Bucs run with Brad Johnson, the Bears run with Rex Grossman. You know, I mean, I know like Dilfer, like in the game they won here, he had like basically no stats. I mean, it was very, very meager. So, I mean, it's not like he had to play outside himself or anything like that. So, I would imagine, but it's still along the way for all those guys, there had to have been moments, right? There had to have been moments where they had to make throws. You have to. That's the nature of this game. So I just don't know that Saturday will have to be that. If the Titans, if it's best case scenario of the Titans' overall performance, I think he blends in with everybody else, doesn't make the big mistake, you know, makes the throws when he needs to make them, and they should win. I mean, they are the better team here. I fully believe that, and I think if they win this, the next game, you know, I think that that's a much more debatable situation.
Yeah, and the thing about this matchup specifically, you brought up the stats earlier with Cincy's defense against the pass, not very good. I mean, they're not a very good pass defense. So it's one of those games where you're hoping that Julio Jones carries the momentum from the Houston game into this game. A.J. Brown is A.J. Brown, and you've got options in the passing game to spread the ball around and move the ball because, look, none of us really know what Derrick Henry is going to look like coming up on Saturday. My expectations are that he's going to look pretty close to Derrick Henry because Derrick Henry to me just seems like a different guy. He's an absolute freak of nature out there. And I would expect there are some moments where we'll be talking about next Monday morning and looking at each other and saying, good Lord, how did Derrick Henry do that based on the injury he just had and he came off and played really well. That's my expectation. I could be totally wrong. I don't know what's going to happen with Derrick Henry. But regardless of what happens with him, I still think this is a game on Saturday where the Titans should be able to throw the ball, and they should be able to throw the ball and move it down the field with some pretty good consistency. So does that mean that Tannehill has to be perfect? No. But I do think the opportunity is there against this defense for you to make some plays in the passing game. And, you know, there was a time this year where we didn't know if this offense could do that. Now that they're healthier, my expectations for Tannehill in this passing game have gone up based on what I've seen the last couple of weeks, which is a good thing.
Another thing to keep in mind here on this matchup, when you look at the, you know, the Bengals D, you know, three defensive linemen got hurt against the Raiders. And this is, again, this is where it's good to have a bye, because you watch some of these other teams. The Bucs got banged up too yesterday, but, you know, Mike Daniels groin injury in the first series, Ogunjobi ankle in the third. And then of course, you know, one of their stars, one of their few stars on defense, Trey Hendrickson, left in the third quarter with a concussion. You know, that's a two of these playoff games coming up here. You got Nick Bosa and the Niners. Nick Bosa concussion. Will he be ready to play Saturday in Lambeau? And that could be a big decide. The Niners yesterday, when he was out, it was like, oh, wow, Dak seems a lot more comfortable back there all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Trey Hendrickson. That would, you know, that's obviously a huge deal for the Bengals. He's their sack leader, you know, to get him back for this game. So that's something to keep, you know, keep in mind. A little bit banged up there, and they're just, you know, they're secondaries. It doesn't scare you very much. They don't have, you know, they've got some, I mean, Jermaine Pratt had the big pick, you know, at the goal line, to clinch that game and kind of, chase out some demons, because the Bengals have had so many crushing playoff losses over the years. You know, Sam Hubbard's a very good player, but they're not great. They're not great on D. Their rushing D numbers are impressive. You got to keep those kind of in perspective. Like, what does that mean? Sometimes it's situational, especially in the league now. You know, like, are they really a team that's built to stop a Derrick Henry, and really let's say a Derrick Henry and Deontay Foreman rushing attack? And again, I don't know. I have my doubts about that. And I think they're going to have to devote resources to it. And that's where, to your point, I mean, Tannehill's going to have opportunities. The Titans should have play action shots in there, and they should be able to have a lot of offensive success Saturday. That would be a huge disappointment if the Titans offense doesn't have a good day.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Tyler texting and says, so who would the NFL rather see advance from an interest perspective, Joe Burrow or Derrick Henry, since both markets are relatively small? That's coming from Tyler on the text line. You think the NFL is pulling for the Bengals, Joe?
Wait, are we talking conspiracy now? Is this, Tyler, are you anticipating conspiracy to get one of these two teams?
Is Jerome Boger making a guest appearance on Saturday?
Let's see. What would the NFL? Obviously the quarterback, the rising young star quarterback is always, always a great thing in the NFL. But I think Derrick Henry at this point, the idea, the story of him coming back, you know, breaking his foot, and then coming back around and being in these playoffs, and everybody remembers, you know, especially 2 years ago, what he did in the postseason. I mean, he was the story of that postseason until the Chiefs finally did a, you know, good enough job and you know, beat the Titans and got it done. So I think that there's more, a little bit more pop in Derrick Henry advancing, frankly. Maybe I'm being a little bit of a homer there, but I just, you know, the Bengals are going to be a team here moving forward to reckon with, just because of Burrow and Chase alone. Like, they, you know, they got a chance to be special for a long time. But I think right now that Derrick Henry has more appeal nationally.
See, I don't know, man. Joe Burrow.
You're not sure?
Yeah, well, specifically the Burrow to Chase combo, I think I'd probably go with that from a purely national interest standpoint. That's just me. Maybe I'm being too quarterback biased.
I think it's going to get there for sure. And this is, and that's the thing. If they go in and you know, light up the Titans and win that game, then it builds momentum. But I, how many people around the country watch Bengals? You know what I mean? I think the Bengals, kind of like the Titans. It takes a while for everybody to catch up with it. Derrick Henry has been an established star here for a while. I mean, look, I like watching Ja'Marr Chase, but I still think a Derrick Henry stiff arm, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Carries more replay potential.
Maybe we'll see a couple of those coming up this weekend. It's been too long since we've seen a Derrick Henry stiff arm.
Yes, who will be the who will be the victim? I'll guess like Von Bell. That'll be my we should do a pool on who gets the Derrick Henry. I'll go Von Bell.
There's still a chance for a Josh Norman repeat if the Titans and Niners meet up in the Super Bowl. Could have another one.
Oh man. It could happen.
Hope not, but it could happen. We'll see what happens on that front. When we come back, we'll switch gears, get into the Nashville Predators. Interesting weekend for the Predators over the weekend with a big game coming up tonight as well. Also, some interesting college basketball over the weekend as well. Michelle Konezovic is just going to give it to me on the other side.
Yes, Robbie.
This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Shot clock turned off. How about the Kentucky Wildcats? 107 points against a team that was giving up only 61 per game on the season. Allen up top, and Collins couldn't corral it. And Chandler in the game right to the very end for Tennessee. Lavchich misses the dunk. DeBunge will get a bucket, and that'll be that. What a performance by the Cats. John Calipari's going to be thrilled.
Kentucky was absolutely fabulous. What a great building block for the rest of the season.
More hoops coming your way. The Seminoles are up at the Carrier.
Ah, yes, John Calipari and the Kentucky Wildcats take an important step to avoid the NIT on Saturday with a nice 107-79 win against the Tennessee Volunteers. I can't really believe we've made it an hour and a half into the show, and Michelle's not said anything to me about this yet.
I know I hadn't said anything yet, but when you asked me this morning, how was your weekend? I don't know why that wasn't the first thing that came out of my mouth. Oh, I'm just walking on sunshine, boys.
I thought it would be.
Missed opportunity.
Hey, but listen, you brought it up. So, I mean, what an incredible game, guys, right?
Well, I'm glad this probably good for them to miss out on the NIT, so that's good. And they might actually make the tournament now.
Listen, my called shot was that we would beat you all by 10, not by 28. So, hey, I'm happy. How'd you feel about that performance by your Vols, Rob?
I didn't watch a single second of it, so I couldn't really tell you. In typical college basketball fashion, I kind of hold off till March.
That's okay. You guys won't make it to then, so I hope you have fun in the NIT while we win the national championship.
The roles have reversed.
You really think that?
In all seriousness, if you'd have told me that Tennessee would score 79 points in that game, I'd have said, oh, yeah, well, they're going to win that game for sure. And that did not happen, Joe Rexstrode. 107 for the Wildcats.
Yeah, that was like on that day, there is not a single college basketball team that beats Kentucky on that day. That was just – and it happens sometimes. You see teams go into like Tennessee against Tennessee Tech in the Garden. Didn't matter who it was. They were going to brick the shot. It became contagious. Kentucky from the start, man. I mean, because I thought, you know, Oscar Tshiebwe would have to be a huge factor in that game. And I figured, you know, Tennessee, their offensive struggles, that's going to be the big key. Can they shoot well enough? Well, they did. They shot really well. They got Josiah James, Justin Powell hitting shots. I mean, Vescovies and Chandler were both really good. Didn't matter. Tshiebwe didn't have a big game. Didn't matter. They hit everything. So one of those magical days for the Wildcats. I like them. I think they're a good team. I think Wheeler, you see with him at point guard, what that does. He just can get wherever he wants. It's also like, I just hate, I, I'm not going to lament the transfer portal, but I still hate that it's like, hey, there's a good player from an SEC team. How about come over to Kentucky and play? Let's go next year and you can play against Georgia now. You know,
Kentucky
hate that,
has such a phenomenal game, and Joe just still needs to find a way to rip on him.
What? What am I ripping?
Everybody has a transfer portal. You're still Tennessee basketball. You're still the SEC. Go recruit better. Go get people better.
Well, Tennessee was supposed to get Oscar Tshiebwe, and they blew it. So
they did.
That's on there. That's on them. Apparently, he wanted to go to Tennessee. One assistant wasn't sold, and boy,
that worked out well.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, you know, when you have like a, because actually last year a lot of talk was Pippen. I mean, you know, Kyle Tucker, you know, our friend of the show, my guy at The Athletic covers Kentucky. We talked a bit about that, like, I think Kyle would not mind Scottie Pippen Jr. coming on in, and you know, and it's just like, so just go, you're just recruiting off teams in your own league now. Like, you know, you beat us pretty well. Like, come over and play with us next year. I mean, it's like it's AAU again, you know.
But you can say that for any dominant, you can say that for Alabama football or Georgia. Okay.
I mean, you need to get all defensive about it. I mean, it's fine.
I'm not getting defensive. I just got to.
I think you're getting a little defensive.
You know what? Because I'm a Kentucky homer. So, yes, I am. But I'm just saying, you can say that for any dominant program. You know what I mean? Not just Kentucky basketball. Obviously, yeah, we're talking about that right now. But
the rich get richer. Right. Yeah. I mean, that's true.
Well, keep out of the NIT, so that's good.
Kentucky looks good. I think they got a chance to, I don't know, we'll see. They got a chance though with the point guard. They're not going to shoot like that. But Tshiebwe is special. And the Vols, I don't know,
they got some problems.
They got some problems.
They played good though.
Turnovers though, the problem is for them that game, they helped feed that game in the first half with the turnovers. And that's been a problem for them too much, where you just make these goofy plays. It happened at LSU too, the run that just kind of buried them in the game. It's like all of a sudden they're just getting the ball ripped out of their hands, or they're making the lazy pass and it's going the other way. So you help feed Kentucky's hotness by giving them runouts and layups too, and wide open, you know, spot up jumpers in transition. But at least they shot well. I can't really – like, I don't look at that as like some indictment of their defense. I still think they're a very good defensive team when they can set up in the half court. You can't give up runouts. But Vescovy, Chandler, you know, at least some of those guys shot well. I think inside, maybe it's time for the freshmen to play a little bit more. And Rick Barnes referred to that after the game. You know, they got to figure out their rotation at the five. And look, if Fulkerson just – the physicality in some nights, it just doesn't suit him in a matchup. Everybody loves John Fulkerson. I mean, everyone does. But in certain matchups, I think you have to look elsewhere.
The noise on Vol Twitter getting pretty loud on Rick Barnes. It's getting pretty loud.
Yeah, and it's still the same thing with that. Like, this is the best – now, you can look at the Bruce Pearl era too. And he got to an Elite Eight, but I still say this is the best, like, healthiest consecutive stretch for Tennessee basketball in a long time. And, you know, those two coaching tenures in particular, there's been a lot of bad ones over the years. And he's recruiting at a very high level. There's a lot to like about what he's done, and to be very careful if you want to move on from him. But at the same time, I get it, because you raise the expectations when you have a year like when you have a team like you did a couple years ago, and then when you recruit off it like he has, and it's the second year in a row, well, third year in a row, there's been a lot of frustration. Two years ago, we knew that team was like that was a kind of a rebuilding year. Second year in a row, though, we thought it was something, and then they go into this lull, and it's on him to fix it. It's ultimately going to be determined by the NCAA tournament, and we know with Rick Barnes, it's just, I mean, the record in March at this point is, I mean, it's not great. It's not nearly as good as it should be relative to all of his other success. But I still look at that at like, just be careful what you wish for kind of thing. I think he still has, he's got good recruiting classes coming up too, moving forward. But yeah, I would say, I agree. I feel like there's more, especially because of the way last year ended and now into this, I feel like there's a growing discontent with Tennessee fans and Rick.
Big one for the Preds on Saturday. Back and forth game. They get a point in overtime, fall into the Bruins 4-3, the final score. Big goal by Roman Josi to tie that thing up on Saturday. So Forsberg's still on the COVID list. And then Matthias Ekholm gets added to the COVID list as well. Yakov Trenin comes off. So obviously, I mean, those are two pretty big holes, not having Forsberg, not having Ekholm. I still thought the Predators played okay over the weekend against Boston, and now that sets up a pretty massive week this week, beginning tonight with a divisional matchup on the road in St. Louis. Pregame at 6:30 here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. You can check out a 30-minute edition of Preds Insiders tonight as well from 6 to 6:30. But big one tonight for the Preds against the Blues.
Yeah, I can't remember the last – do they ever beat Boston? Like, I'm sure that I'm like just forgetting something, but, like, I feel like they never beat Boston. It was good to get the win. You credit Roman Josi – or the point. Credit Roman Josi for the point, you know.
He was unbelievable.
Yeah, and he ties it up, and you get the point out of there. And, man, Janot had did he have Granlund? I think Janot had Granlund – in the 3-on-3, and it's going to be just, you know, it's a point-blank chance to win the game. Just enough of a deflection to send it the other way, and they won it. But I thought, yeah, you know, I didn't think it was bad. I thought it was a pretty decent bounce back from, you know, the Sabres loss. And, I mean, what, four games this week, right? So, yeah, it's going to – you're going to have to involve your backup goalie, and you're going to have to – you know, really gear up and hope you get some people back. But this is a big one tonight. Another one of those top of the division matchups against and this is, of course, the team that used to be like the heavy team that you would outskill. And now it's two heavy teams.
It'll be a physical matchup tonight. I don't think there's any question about that. When we come back, it is time for the Rex Rant, Joe Rexroad's Rant of the Week. That's coming up on the other side. This is Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
The time is now for the Rex Rant.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
On Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
And it is that time of the week, time for the Rex Rant here on Robbie and Rexroad. Joe Rexroad's Rant of the Week, every Monday morning at 7:45. A little Kokomo bringing us back in, a personal favorite of mine, and as we know, a personal favorite of Joe Rexroad's as well.
A great song to play with ice weighing down our houses and buried in the snow as we are.
It does
right
put
now.
Me in a much better mood than the snow outside does.
Yes, yes. Hey, so this has become kind of a way for me to put more basketball into the show, which I'm doing again.
Attaboy.
But also, I apologize, but Jared got me. You know, I don't want the Rex Rant to become just a place to yell at Jared, okay? But today, I got to yell at Jared and his friend Chad Withrow. They ganged up on me Friday because both of them can't stand Jerry Stackhouse and think basically his tenure has been fireable, and that I'm on I'm on an island right now and thinking it isn't. So for these purposes, I'm going to call them Stithrow. Stillman and Withrow are Stithrow for this discussion.
I like it.
The bottom line is I think those guys are whacked out on this. I really do. And I don't think they're judging Stackhouse like they would judge other coaches in the same situation. I think there's got to be something personal there. I understand that Stackhouse has rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. And we'll get to Stackhouse in a minute. But first, one key point Withrow made in bringing this up, he brought this up because he wanted to, attack my take Friday on Jerry. And, of course, Jared and I have argued about it now. It's become this basically hot issue that we've manufactured into a hot topic. But you know, Chad's wondering why I continue to defend Stackhouse. His point on that being the whole thing last year was Stackhouse and me. Long story short, for people who don't remember, I wanted to write a big profile on Jerry, which according to Stithrow, a puff piece. I thought it was balanced, had criticisms of him, but I guess anything that has depth and context is a puff piece, which means I write a lot of puff pieces, by the way. But long story short, you know, he had a line in there about Trump voters, which was about racism in general and criticism of him, which was misconstrued and still is clearly by some. He took a lot of crap for it. So Jerry got mad at me, called out the story after a game, basically said the quote was taken out of context. I ran the entire interview online to show it wasn't taken out of context. We moved on. But I guess because of that, like, I'm supposed to be like a thin-skinned baby who's unprofessional. So I assess a team or coaching performance based on like personal vindictiveness. I mean, why would anyone do that? Never done it, never will. I mean, we're all human. We can be affected by our personal interactions and relationships. But I mean, you know, over the years I've been screamed at and hated. A coach wouldn't answer my questions for an entire season. You still have to keep doing the job with a clear head. And serving, you know, the fans and readers who count on your coverage. And the objective non-spin assessment of Stackhouse at this point is not that he should be fired. I don't think that's me defending him. That's me trying to look at the situation in full, not picking and choosing things to support an argument, but looking at the whole situation. So let's look at it. Stithrow brought up winning percentage in the SEC, Bryce Drew compared to Jerry Stackhouse. But let's look again what Bryce Drew inherited. He had inherited a program that had just gone to the NCAA tournament, a disappointing 15-16 season, by the way, but the bar was very different then, under Kevin Stallings. Kevin Stallings had a pretty good program at Vanderbilt. Drew basically got nothing from his first recruiting class, Peyton Wilson, Cleavon Brown, but he got a ton out of Luke Kornet, Riley LaChance, Jeff Robertson, Joe Toy. He did a good job. He got the NCAA tournament with Stallings players, playing in a program that had gone to the tournament 7 of the last 13 years, including 2 Sweet 16. Still, he did a good job. 19-16, 10-8 in the SEC, they snuck into the tournament. Then the next year, Kornet leaves. He, again, doesn't get much from his second class. He does have Saban Lee. Goes 12-20, goes 6-12 in the SEC. It was a very disappointing second season, a big backward step. Bad trend. That's just year one to year two, but it's a big step back. Then we know what happened next. You bring in Darius Garland, Simi Chitu, huge hype for this team. Yanni Wetzel and Matt Ryan are transfers. You got Saban Lee. You end up losing Darius Garland. You go 0-18 in the SEC. And at this point, by the way, in that season, no way did I think Drew was in any kind of trouble or should have been. It was year three. It was early. I never would have guessed it would have gone 0-18. Never would have guessed it would have gotten as bad as it got. And in fact, I wrote at one point, there's no way he'd be fired, which is why I had that stupid anchor on my forehead at one point on the internet. But anyway, he had no answers. You know, the team tuned him out. He also had a new AD. That often means an AD wants his own coach, but you go from 10-6-0 in the SEC. You go from 19-12-9 in overall wins. That is a bad trend. So let's look at Stackhouse. He comes in with all that talent leaving. He has Saban Lee. He has Aaron Neesmith. Builds everything around Neesmith. Lee becomes an actual good player under him after two frustrating years. Vanderbilt is 8-7. They beat Davidson and Buffalo. Not a terrible start. They almost went at Auburn. Aaron Neesmith, 23 points a game to lead the SEC, 36 minutes a game. Everything built around him breaks his foot. Done for this season. 8-7 turns to 11-21. Now, they still got 3 SEC wins without him, including over a ranked LSU team. But, you know, it was not a good year. But 9 improved to 11, 0 improved to 3. Lee becomes a good player, goes to the NBA. Scottie Pippen becomes the next guard that really is developing and becoming a really good player under Jerry Stackhouse. Dylan Dessou starts to become a really good player under Jerry Stackhouse. Last year, there were some good things that happened. Not enough good things. There's no question about that. Dylan Dessou then tears his ACL, and then that really ended their chance of being markedly better. I mean, they went up from 14th to 13th in the SEC. 9-16 is a better winning percentage than 11-21, but it's not great. It's also 2 years. This year, they add Liam Robbins, big man from Minnesota, hasn't played a second yet. So again, you can start going through all this and say, oh, okay, you're going to make excuses for him. Well, look, you can say that, but we're talking about making a firing decision on someone, right? So if I'm doing that, I want all the facts. And the fact is that after Saturday's win at Georgia, Stackhouse is 10-6 overall. He's 2-2 in the SEC. He's on his way, probably in all likelihood, to an improvement. Is it enough of an improvement to make people happy? I would say no. To avoid being fired? Yeah. I mean, this is a coach who has a top 20 recruiting class coming in, which Withrow kind of brushed aside, like, well, that's, if that's your only reason, it's not the only reason. It's a coach who has a top 20 recruiting class coming in, a top 50 big, a top 100 point guard with all that has gone on. I mean, I think in most situations that are like this, even non-Vanderbilt situations, and we know it's harder to get fired at Vanderbilt, but I think even in non-Vanderbilt situations, you're going to stick with that coach unless that coach is begging you to fire him with an assortment of issues. And I'm sorry, but Stackhouse not being nice to media or not being enough of a program salesman, it doesn't qualify. And one more thing on this, and this rant is going on and on. I mean, I think with Withrow in particular, I think he's typically not the guy who jumps to these absolute negative conclusions with, say, Tennessee coaches. I mean, I've heard some pretty strong defenses of Butch Jones, Jeremy Pruitt in moments. And the reason I remember those is because I agreed with them at the time. I mean, that's typically how I look at things. I don't think you overreact like someone is the next great coach, but you also don't overreact on someone needing to be fired unless they need to be fired. Now, look, if Vanderbilt this season bails on Stackhouse, as we saw 3 years ago with his predecessor, and it just goes absolutely into the crapper, then the discussion changes. But right now, I think it's a pretty dumb discussion that just wasted an entire segment of this show. So thanks a lot, Stithro.
Well done. Today's edition of the Rex Rant. I will say, I mean, heading into this season, I was in the camp of you're going to need to see some pretty big improvement or firing him was on the table for me. Now, to your point, they're 10-6 overall. What are they, 2-2 in the conference right now? So,
yep.
You know, they've got a chance to do that and to have some significant improvement. So, I mean, I've still got an open mind on what they can be and what they can do this year. But I do think this the close of this season is pretty darn important for Jerry Stackhouse.
Okay, and that's fine. But I'm still – when we talk about firing someone, I mean, I'm sorry, but in college athletics, I absolutely care what kind of players he has coming in, whatever sport he or she has coming in, whatever sport we're talking about, right?
Sure.
So I mean, I don't disagree with you, but I guess let me ask you this. So let's say they go, 7-11 in the SEC. So that would end up, I guess, what would that be? 17-17. That'd be 17-17 overall, 500, 7-11 in the SEC. Would you fire him?
I probably wouldn't, but he'd be on pretty thin ice next year. I mean, you're about to lose Scottie Pippen Jr. too. I mean, you got to keep that part in mind as well, that you have one of the best players in the SEC. And if you can't be better than this with one of the best players in the SEC, that's got to be, to me, a part of the discussion as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he probably will, though. Actually, I think it's also on the table that Pippen comes back because
he could.
And you watch Pippen. I mean, look, his size is just a problem when it comes to the NBA. But yeah, you know, there's a good chance, more than likely than not, he moves on. It's just like to call this tenure right now a disaster. I don't think that's true. I don't think it's been great either. I don't have some great feeling like Stackhouse is going to start racking up SEC titles, but I don't know, man. I think that you to look at his whole thing and say it's a disaster, I think is wanting to find the disaster.
This has been the Rex Rant. You can check it out every Monday morning at 7:45 here on Robbie and Rex Road. Joe Rex Road's Rant of the Week. And when we come back, we'll be joined by our friend Corey Curtis from News 2. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans and their divisional round matchup against the Cincinnati Bengals. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.